Blog Talk Radio.
Is it echoing?
Conviction to Zero Redemption by Stephen L. Bobo.
Rejection is to be.
Conviction to Zero Redemption by Stephen L. Bobo.
For having me back once again, Bozilla here, and hopefully Miss Jessica is on the line. If she is, please chime in. All right, try it again. She says she's gonna be ready. So,
Miss Jessica, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
All right,
hi, welcome.
Jessica.
Welcome to the kelp.
Thank you.
No problem. So, go ahead. Miss Jessica's back, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to be talking here a little bit about the first thing I'm going to talk about, and Miss Jessica has something she wants to talk about. So, I'm going to let Miss Jessica go ahead and chime on in with that, and I'll chime in with her, and then I'm going to fill her in on what I'm about to talk about, because you guys heard me talk about this a couple of days ago on my Facebook Live. And speaking of Facebook Live, I have a one's going to be coming up here pretty soon. I got to figure out how I'm going to swing this one. It's about a young man, I'm not going to say his name quite yet, who I was pushing to get out of jail that he said he had done something that he didn't do. He got cleared of it, and he passed away. He caught the virus while he was incarcerated. So we don't know what virus we're talking about, what's going around right now. So we're going to talk about that another time. I'll have to hopefully have the sister or the mother on so we can talk about it. That's something that's hit hard to me because me and my crew worked so hard to get that young man out, and we did, and not to go through this. So that's enough sadness for right now. So, Ms. Jessica, go right ahead.
Great evening, ladies and gentlemen. Great evening. Okay, so we know last week we had an awesome, awesome discussion, and it was basically all about how incarceration began in the first place. How do we come to where we came out of 460-something years of slavery, right? Then went through Jim Crow, right? Now this, mass incarceration. Mass incarceration is such a broad topic, but we narrowed it down last week to talking about the root cause and where mass incarceration all began. And do you guys remember towards the end of the call, you know, well, towards the beginning of the call, we talked more on childhood. And it starts from something very tragically, something very, very tragically happening during childhood, or maybe a disappointment, maybe an abandonment of one parent or the other, something that went down that caused that child to have deep down anger issues or traumatized in some type of way, maybe some type of physical abuse, sexual abuse, whatever it is. Okay, we all know that, you know, all children come from different backgrounds, but where, you know, we talked about how the drug war started, back in the late 70s, early 80s, right? And like how the tough on crime law started back in the early 80s when presidents like Ronald Reagan, even Bill Clinton got into office, right? And Clinton is the one that started the truth in sentencing law. So back in the mid-1990s, he started the truth in sentencing. It's basically he wanted, it started with, you know, Ronald Reagan and George Bush, but it ended up leading into when Clinton got in office, basically saying we're going to, they're going to get, you know, more tougher on crime, more tougher on laws. Let's build some laws centered around if a person, if an offender offends at least three times, that means that they will be locked up and locked away for a very long time, most likely not qualifying to be eligible for parole. So they would sentence them without giving them any possibilities of parole so many years that they would have to serve 85% of that time. It doesn't matter if it's 45 years, 65 years, 85 years. These are the sentences that our black and brown brothers and sisters was getting. And basically, locking them up, throwing away the key, expecting them, it was all death by incarceration. That's basically what it is, because anytime you give somebody 60 or more years, 40 or more years, you're basically asking for them to and initiating for them to die in prison and never get out. There's no rehabilitation. There's no preparing them back to reenter society. No, nothing. Just locking them up, throwing away the key. So we want to just, I just wanted to talk on that today because it's much deeper than we all know. And it started, you know, with them wanting to get tough on the drugs, you know. But what I don't get, you know, and I'm learning, I'm still researching more and learning more about it, about this, you know. But what I don't get is how were they able to bring drugs into our community and let the drugs flow in our community, which turned into ghettos and turn into hoods, and then they started bringing the alcohols in our community, right? You know, the government, I'm saying. Started bringing all these things in our community. You bringing and providing these things in our neighborhoods, you know, coming out, you know, making these corner stores sell these products to our people, right? But then when our people get caught with the drugs, when they get caught, you know, selling a drug that's illegal, you locking them away for life and giving them life in prison. How is that? So that's what I want to talk about today.
Right there, I would say it's still going around right now. You know, it hasn't stopped. But here's my thing with that. Just because they put that liquor in the corner stores in the inner cities, and that's brown people, black people, it doesn't matter, poor Caucasian people, it doesn't mean that you have to go in there and buy it. And if you buy it, it doesn't mean you have to act the fool when you drink it, because that's what they plan for you to do. But you don't have to do that. My main concern with the pipeline and like that, what you said, was the drugs coming in. That was the very first step in the pipeline. And then, you know, when George W. Bush came out and said, no child left behind. But here's the thing. You left a whole bunch of people behind. The inner city schools, most of those kids were left behind. If you did have parents that knew the education value of what you should have, you would still be left behind. That still goes on now. Let's talk about this right now. I'm going to piggyback off what you were saying. I'm going to drop this one in. Here in Columbus, Ohio, and everybody around the country knows this virus that's going around. It's stopping the schools. Like here in Columbus, Ohio, K through 12, and Danielle, if you hear me, K through 12, if I'm right, please let me know I'm right with that. K through 12, because I don't want to give no false information. K through 12 will be going virtual.
Pre-K.
Pre-K through 12.
Pre-K through 12.
Pre-K through 12. And that's including kids who have special needs and all that, autism, all that type of stuff. Let's think about this
across
for a second.
Board.
Across the board. Now, let's take this for a second. If you have a child who is blind or a child who has is hard of hearing, you have to have special equipment for this type of stuff. So are you going to give these parents the special equipment they need and the education factor for how to use it? Or are you just going to say, hey, here you go, watch this DVD, and there you go. So how are you helping the children with this virus? And don't get me wrong, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not telling you to send your kids to school. But let's just think of the whole situation. Quit thinking about yourself. Let's think about the children. The children are the ones who are going to be sacrificing themselves. Once again, if they go to school, they can get sick and get illness and maybe even possibly die. And then you don't send them to school, they're going to get cheap in education, especially if you're in the inner city. If you are in the suburban area, that 1% kid, he's going to have the best of all worlds because he already has the internet. He probably already has a spaceship to take him out the world so we can see what's going on up there. So let's talk about the kids who are in the inner city who don't have the finances because mommy's working 2 or 3 jobs. Daddy's probably incarcerated or he doesn't care. And I'm going to hit that in a minute about one person I know who doesn't care. His name is Mr. Arnold. But that's not here nor there. But here we go with this, ladies and gentlemen. I want you to think of this real quick. If that's your son, if that's your daughter in an inner city school, and the school system is going to make you have to send them to school over the internet, what if you can't afford the internet? Let's think about that. What if you have to make a choice? Oh, am I going to have steak or am I fried chicken or am I going to have hot dogs and ramen noodles and internet? Which one are you going to choose? You're going to choose the internet so your kid can have a better chance of life. So you're not going to feed the child what it's supposed to be getting because you want to cut down on your finances going into the food because you can't afford internet and food. I look at the household that I'm in right now. I'm on Social Security, and I get paid once a month. So that once a month, I have to pay my bills. I have to buy food. I have to buy clothing for myself because I just can't go to say visit the Paul's. I can't go to all this a little place on outskirts because I'm a big dude. They don't have my clothes for my size. And if they do, they're usually like a tent to make my pants. And I'm not wearing no tent for pants. So here's what I'm trying to tell you guys. This right here is a bigger thing that nobody's thinking about. They're thinking about what's going to benefit them, and the ones who get benefit are the ones who sit behind the desk telling you what you're going to do, and most likely they're the 1%. They're nowhere near the inner city. They're nowhere near the – I don't have the mayor living next door to me here. I don't even know who lives next door to me. I don't even know where the mayor lives. But yet how can you tell me you're not going to give me the right education for my child? That's the only thing I want to know. Please, somebody chime in and let me know. Danielle, you out there? I know you like to speak on this. Let us know. Ms. My guest host, please chime in. Let's talk about that.
My issue with this COVID thing is, in a way, the COVID seems to be contributing to the pipeline and to the issues that Ms. Hall spoke about. She was talking about drugs and the history. A lot of times the drugs were – the dealing of the drugs by minorities was a way for young people to get out from underneath the hood, you know, to make quick money in order to be able to – what they would think would be survive. Now, if we are going back into this COVID where we are we'll use the words they like to use, where they say they are modifying the education, okay? If you're modifying an education system that was already shaky to begin with, where does that leave our children that are struggling? Which means, is that going to add to the drug problem? Is that going to add to the incarceration problem? And I say yes, because desperate people do desperate things. And when your education is messed with, it cuts down your chances. Like a high school diploma is the difference between, you know, really any job and not having a job. And 75% of inmates in America are high school dropouts. Now, what
That's
is
right.
that? Now, I'm going to throw a whole bunch of numbers. One in 59 children is going to be diagnosed with autism. What do we do with those kids that are not getting proper instruction? Okay, I'm going to stop now. Go ahead, y'all.
Okay, so I wanted to chime in to kind of right behind her because this is good. Because, yes, what are we going to do with those children who are one out of every 59 diagnosed with autism? What are we going to do with those children that's less advantaged, the ones that's disadvantaged, that parents don't have money? You know, mother is working two or three jobs, father is absent or either incarcerated. Because those are the children that's going to be left behind. Those are the ones that parents probably don't have the education themselves to work with their own children to help them to stay caught up. So academically disadvantaged, I would say yes. Those children will be academically disadvantaged. And so, therefore, leading into having the basic life skills to be successful in life, no, they will not have that. But that's what we got to step up as a people. Us that are educated, we have to step up as a people to teach our own children, because they're not worried about our children. Their children are getting the best. Their children have internet and YouTube at home. You know what I'm saying? Or Zoom.
Yeah.
Zoom webinars.
Zoom
that they can do their e-learning
right.
on. Our children do not. So that really worries me, and it concerns
it worries
me a lot.
Me too. It does. And here's the thing about that. You can't teach kids on certain levels. Okay, say that this family, because I'm going to just say always women and men. Let's say this family. They are together. Both parents are working. Now you have grandma come in to watch the kids while the parents are at work. Does grandma know how to run internet? What if you got three kids, different grade levels? How are you going to share the internet if you're on three different grade levels? Are you going to give each kid their own little Chromebook? I doubt that. So let's go back to the inner city. Let's go back to now the drug trade is getting heavy. So now you got people who are smoking drugs because they're trying to battle what they're going through. Sometimes they go to food or go to drugs to battle with the depression they're going through because they can't get a job and they can't support their family. I'm not using that as an excuse, but that's what happens. Now, think about this, guys. If you're living in the inner city, the dad's at work, mom's at work, grandma's in the house. Grandma's 50-something, 60-something, so that's 70, 80 years old, watching two kids. Somebody breaks into the house and takes the Chromebook. I'll sit there and let y'all ponder on that for a second. I don't think nobody's ever thought about that aspect. Or they have that auntie that lives with them, and she's a crackhead. And she takes the laptops while they sleep and goes sell them in the street. How do we deal with that? So all the people say, we're going to give you another Chromebook. You know how much Chromebooks are? How much are Chromebooks? So just think about that for one second. How much, even though they might be locked out, can't nobody use it, but now you're going to jeopardize their kids' education. And now them kids are right back in the pipeline. And then now how are they going to do stuff? Then, okay, here's the big thing with me. I was a football player in high school. You ever hear me talk about sports in high school, sports? But the virus is taking away the sports. They're taking away the education factor. So how are kids going to play sports? Some kids use sports, football, basketball, track, girls and boys, to go to the next level, to go to college. If you take away that advantage for them to go to school or something that they know they can excel in, sports, and you cut it, what are they going to do now? You ain't got no education to fall back on because Auntie Jan took the damn Chromebooks and sold them for crack. So what are the kids supposed to do now? I'm not saying send your kids back to school, but we need to take up a whole big bubble of what we put these kids in. Now, these kids are going to be looking at us here the next 10, 20 years of the ones that are going to be taking care of us the ones who are over 30 in Social Security. They're the ones that are going to be taken care of. And less of that man in the White House, Donald Trump, cut Social Security, we might not even have that. But yet you want to vote for that man because he's the best for business. He knows how to run businesses. No, he don't. Keep it real. He doesn't know how to run shit. I'm sorry. For those who are religious and hear me cussing, I apologize for that. But I'm serious. He's not going to do nothing for you. He's going to cut everything that we have going today. Look at Obamacare. Just shredded it. Shredded it. Every country in this world, every country, look at Canada, has medical. Everybody has medical. If you have cancer, you can get chemo. You have MS, you can get chemo. You have mental illnesses, you can do what you're supposed to do with all that stuff. You don't have to worry about what am I going to do with health care. Now, let's put no health care in the picture. Now your kids need health care to go to school. What if mommy and dad ain't got no health care? Oh, we'll let the system take care of them. The system is going to take them so much. And they're getting tired of doing that. So what are you going to do then, guys? Everybody has to answer what we need to do. And not saying us on this phone, because most of us who's on these calls are the below the 1%ers. 1%ers don't call in because they don't want to hear the truth. And I want 1%ers to call in and tell me what they think. And tell me, where your child is at right now? Oh, they're at summer camp. Oh, my child out here in the front yard cleaning up stuff because, you know, he's trying to make a couple of dollars. He's not waiting for mommy and daddy to give him something. Let's keep it real, people. It's so easy to tell people what the system's not doing, but work the system. Work the system that's made for you, that's supposed to this system made for you. But do you really believe it is? I don't think it is, because we wouldn't struggle as a unit, as family. Black, white, green, blue, purple, doesn't matter. We're all family. We all bleed the same, all everything. White people calling people the N-word. N-word, us brothers are killing each other. Why? We're all the same. It's one thing against us, it's the government. It's them. The system is made for us to fail, but yet you want to go run and lay back on the system because they're going to take care of you. And that's what they want to do, get comfortable so they can roll the blanket right underneath and fold you up in and throw you in the ditch. That's the government for you. I might get banned off of here. I don't give a damn, but here, I'm telling the truth. We need to help each other. We need to help each other. Quit dogging each other. Everything. And I'm saying that for everybody, men, women, me, myself. I need to quit dogging people. Don't dog nobody. Don't do it, because you never know what's up the road for you. All right, you guys go ahead and go in. I'm done. This is pissing me off. You'll go. I'll just listen now. Sorry.
You know what, Steve? That was. Yeah. This is Jessica again, and you know what? It really does. You know. You triggered a lot of points that I haven't thought about. I thought about, but I haven't really sat and really thought through. And so, like, us talking on this subject tonight, I mean, it's really hitting home, though, because you don't think about, you know, little Johnny, who might be, you know, have everything handed to him by his parents on a silver platter, you know. But little Tyrone over here, you know what I'm saying, go out on the street corner and beat on buckets to make extra money, you know what I'm saying, that he needs for something that he wants to get, you know what I'm saying, or buy for himself, because his mom might have four or five other kids that she has to provide for. She might not be able to provide that pair of shoes that little Johnny needs, you know, for school. So little Tyrone needs. So Tyrone is going to try to get out here and get that money the best way how he can. And it's just like, what's her name, Danielle? I believe I'm saying it right. I'm hoping I'm saying your name right. Was just saying,
yes, you're saying
right. What she was just saying was, like, hey.
Yes, ma'am.
You know. These, like you were just saying, Danielle, like, hey, there's so much that, you know, these parents can, there's so much that, I forgot, lost train of thought what I was getting ready to say. But anyway, there's so much that our black single mothers can do, you know what I'm saying, by themselves and doing it by themselves, you know what I'm saying? But we're at such a disadvantage that it's almost economical quite strong that we can't pull ourselves up out of it, you know what I'm saying, without the help of the government, you know what I'm saying? That's the reason why we need food stamps. That's the reason why we need welfare assistance. That's the reason why we need child care and rental assistance. It's because the demand of the economy are so high, it really is hard for a single parent to make it. You know what I'm saying? Especially if they don't have the financial backing and stability as privileged Caucasian people might have, right? So it's really a lot to think about, but all in still, I'm a believer, and I believe that we serve a God that's really able. I believe that God can get our people up out of this situation that we are in, but I know what it's going to take to do it. It's going to take us to stop hating each other, to stop tearing each other down, and to start loving and supporting each other and lifting each other back up. It's going to take us as a people to come back together, and start loving each other again like we used to, and sticking together. Other races and ethnicities, why is it so easy for them to stick together? You know? But us, we can't even get along in the same room for a long period of time without a fight breaking out. That's one thing that we need to face, too. That needs to be a topic for another day.
You're right. And this is my grandmother used to say a long time ago, be a minority, being a young black man, you're being young black, blacks, period. I'm saying just like that. Everybody going to hate that. Blacks, period. We're just like crabs in a barrel. Every time one tries to get out to the top, the other one pulls you right back down. That's how we do things. And that's wrong because nobody's better than the other person. I'm not better than Danielle. Daniel's not better than Chrissy. And nobody's better than this person. We all work together for the same cause, but we can't get along. And that's, you know what? And the government sits back and sees that and they laugh because, yep, we got them. We got them. Because we can't come together. We can't. It's proven. And when we do come together, just like you said, we can't be in a room together for 1 minute before we start fighting. Oh, he stepped on my gym shoes. Oh, he looked at my girl. Oh, he said something about my mama. Really? Seriously? That's how we're going to work now? We got more battles to fight than each other. These smart people, they want you to do that. All right, Danielle, I know you probably got some. Tell us about the shows coming up. We're almost done out of time here, I think.
Yes, Mr. B. We have tomorrow at 6:30, we will be having a new friend, Aaron Kirksey. He is a youth advocate, and so we're going to talk to him about his work and what to do with our at-risk youth. Also on Monday, we are having an old friend back, Mr. Danny Kilgore. He ran for office and unfortunately did not get in, but he has not stopped his efforts to make the multicultural landscape better by way of working within the system. So we're going to talk to him on Monday, also at 6:30. If anybody, you know, wants to come back, and Ms. Jessica, you are always welcome back in the kelp. Just give me a call or give Mr. B a call, and we will get back to you. We'll get back to you with a date and a time and all that fun stuff. And if anybody else out there wants to, give us a call, and we can get you set up. We appreciate everybody. We appreciate all that you do, and I'm going to turn the mic back over to you, Mr. B.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in. The time is going. 10 seconds. I want to say thank you, Ms. Jessica. Please come back for the third show because we've got more to talk about. And everybody, please tune in. Thanks, everybody. Good night. Love you. Stay woke.
I will.